This is Closer Look on 98.7 The Peak, providing insight and information about the issues that affect our community today. And now your host, Minnie Salas.
Have you ever gotten paid on Friday and by Wednesday wondered, where did all my money go? That question crosses many minds, and it doesn't make a difference whether you make $30,000 or $130,000 a year. My guests today have been there, and they found the support they needed through Debtors Anonymous.
Debtors Anonymous began its infancy in the New York City area in the late 60s when a group of people who were actually in Alcoholics Anonymous at the time realized that they had problems with money, and they started having some separate meetings to try to figure it out. And they thought they just didn't save enough, so they started regular programs of putting money into savings, and that didn't solve their problems. So they eventually figured out that it was the act of debting, of taking on the debt, that was the real problem. That fledgling effort ended, it just kind of faded away. Then there was some sporadic attempts to get it back together. Finally, in 1976, a very small group of people started meeting again, focused on the debt, and we've been meeting ever since. Right now, the program has grown. We're meeting in 15 different countries, over 500 groups across those countries. We also have groups that meet by phone. We can phone in from anywhere in the world, and we have internet groups. So it's available to anyone anywhere, as long as you have a phone or can go.
And Linda herself is a member of Debtors Anonymous.
I got into this program about 6 years ago. It was the last stop for me because I had tried to solve my money problems for years. And I had a business degree from a major university. I had had a good professional job. I had plenty of help in other ways, and I didn't have enough money to pay the bills. I was using credit cards to take cash advances just to pay the rent, pay the groceries, that kinds of things. And it was overwhelming. I have a chronic illness. I have chronic fatigue syndrome. And so that drastically affected my ability to earn a living just because I couldn't work like 8-to-5 job or regular job. And I was taking in part-time work, but the part-time never earned enough to pay all the bills. It would only pay part of the bills. And over time, that ate up all my savings.
Unlike Linda, who got herself into debt through under-earning, John was making very good money when he found out something was wrong.
When I first realized there was a problem, it was at a time in my life when I was making pretty close to 6 figures. We had a lot of money. We had 3 kids. But yet, something was wrong because taking the kids to McDonald's for a Happy Meal was a major issue. And I was realizing that I was going to work with quarters in my pocket. And even though I was making a lot of money, we didn't have a lot of money.
But John didn't come across DA on his own. It was his wife, Teresa, that stumbled across it by helping out a friend.
I didn't really think I needed DA, but I wanted to be helpful to my friend. She'd been real helpful to me, so I agreed to help her start the meeting. And in some of our literature, there are things called the 15 questions and then signs of compulsive debting. And I got those two pieces of information, read through them, and answered the questions. And that's really when I realized that I had a major problem with compulsive debting. And that's where it really kind of brought into my awareness that it was my attitudes about not just money, but about a lot of things in my life that didn't seem related, but just once I was answering those questions and looking at the signposts really clearly showed me kind of how I got where I was.
But if you asked them prior to DA where their money was going and how they got into the situation, there wouldn't have been an easy answer.
How I got into debt, I really have no clue. It's just all of a sudden, there I was.
You know how you sit down and you say, okay, I'm going to make a budget. And you say, okay, I make X number of dollars. And then here's what it cost me to live, my rent, my car payment, all those kinds of things. And then I would sort of ballpark, well, groceries are approximately this and gas is approximately that and entertainment and so forth. And it would look like I should have, say, $500 left over at the end of the month for saving or fun or whatever I wanted. But not only did I not have $500 left at the end of the month, I had overdraft protection on my checking account, and I was always into the overdraft protection.
And this not only began to take an emotional toll on John and Teresa individually, It affected their family and their relationship with each other as well.
It really kept us from being able to be honest with ourselves and to each other. It was a major roadblock in being able to really truly partner with each other because of all the shame and guilt and stuff that goes around these types of issues. And like just for myself, when I don't really know who I am and what I need, how can I share with my partner what I really need? So then therefore, how could he give that to me? Because what a confusing message that is, you know, if I don't even know.
The other thing I remember vividly was something I called the funeral. That was bill paying time, when we sit down and do all the bills and write all the checks. And this was a two-hour process. There was anger, there was tears, there was fear. And I remember many times laying flat on my back, staring into the ceiling, thinking, what am I going to do?
And although emotionally Linda was in a similar situation, hers was a little different because she had to deal with it on her own.
I didn't have a social life. It's real hard to go out with somebody if you don't have clothes that are appropriate for where they want to take you. And I didn't want to invite anybody over my house because it's pretty obvious that I don't have a lot of money. And I had this thing was, you know, how could I be attractive to a guy when he knew that I didn't have money? You know, that was a really big problem for me. My life was very, very small at the time. I just didn't do a lot of things. I didn't go out to the movies. I didn't go out with friends except for a cup of coffee. I didn't go on vacations. It was just very, very limited, and I felt really bad about myself. I mean, I'd had self-esteem as a professional, independent, and all that had gone down the tubes.
But before John, Teresa, and Linda could get out of debt, it was important that they dealt with issues such as self-esteem and their relationship to money. Because, as anyone in Debtors Anonymous would tell you, it's never about the money itself.
In my mind, I could add 2 plus 2, and that was all I needed to do. If I could just add up my numbers correctly, what I was making coming in and what was going out, everything would be fine. And I played that game for years and months, and every month it never worked out. I was always upside down.
In Debtors Anonymous, one of the first things that we talk about is the fact that this is a disease of thinking and of emotions, spirituality, how we regard ourselves and the world around us and people around us. It is not that we just don't know enough financial information. It's the behaviors and the thought patterns that go into how we make our decisions about everyday life.
So it was time to start taking a closer look at where all of the money was going.
One of the tools that we use is tracking our numbers. So we write down everything that comes in and everything that goes out. And that was amazingly insightful. I was so surprised where I actually spent my money versus where I thought I spent my money.
Keeping our numbers was real simple. You keep track of every penny coming in, and you keep track of every penny going out without prejudice. You just write it. Even if it was something frivolous, you just write it down. You know, when you're keeping your numbers, and when I kept my numbers, yes, a lot of things become evident. I realized how much I was spending eating out. I realized what I was spending on the garage sales. I realized what I was spending with coffee. I realized what I wasn't spending on. I wasn't spending on education. I wasn't going to the movies. So it was a combination of things I was doing, and plus, now that it was in black and white in front of me, things that I wasn't doing was also evident. You know, I had 3 months worth of numbers right in front of me, and I'd say, well, I haven't been to the movies in 3 months. Teresa and I haven't been on a date in I don't know how long. Haven't taken the kids to the water park. I make good money. Why is this happening? And in keeping the numbers, you see a lot of yourself and, you know, what you're wasting time and money on.
For me, a big expenditure was eating out. I worked at a very prestigious company at that point in time. And the people there, you know, they would wear suits that cost what my mortgage was, you know. So a lot of it was kind of keeping up with the Joneses in, you know, the clothing that I wore to work, which was always to me justifiable because it was so that I could earn money. And then they ate out every meal, you know, every lunchtime. So I didn't want to be left out. And because I grew up so poor, I had this deprivation kind of attitude. You know, we never ate out when I was a kid. I mean, it was a big treat to go to A&W. So it was just kind of felt like almost an entitlement now that I felt like I had made it because I was making all that money.
There is a lot of time consuming work and writing down, you know, what your income is and all the ways that you spend money, even down to, you know, the Coke that you bought at Circle K. But the benefit that you get out of that, besides knowing exactly where your money is this, that you begin to work with the problem and work through problems and make decisions. Now I know where my money is coming and going. I could make decisions about where I want it to go. I took an inventory of what I was doing with money and how I was treating myself, because one of the suggestions that I heard from other program members was that I wasn't spending enough on entertainment and clothing and vacations, things for me. And that was counterintuitive for me. I mean, I would think that I would need to spend all my money going toward paying off my debts. And they were saying, no, first of all, you need to take care of yourself better. And then after you do that, you will attract more money and you will be able to pay off your debt faster if you treat yourself better.
It's an interesting way of looking at it. After all, most people would assume that if you spent less money on yourself, you would have more money to pay off debt and save for later. But as John, Teresa, and Linda found out, they needed to fulfill the needs of their true self. If it meant spending more money on clothes, then that's what they needed to do, as long as it wasn't to keep up an appearance that wasn't truly who they were. And this not only helped John, Teresa, and Linda get out of debt, but it actually changed their lives as well.
I say all the time that Debtors Anonymous saved my life, absolutely, because there were times before with my debting that I felt suicidal. I never really planned to take my own life, but there were days that I would feel like, geez, I just want to go to bed and never get up, because it just gets so overwhelming, and the guilt and shame is huge. And I know absolutely that it saved our marriage. It's definitely provided a clarity for me to focus on myself and what my issues are and not blame my husband, which was one of my favorite things to do, is to blame other people, circumstances, that, you know, it's because I don't have the right job, it's because I don't have the right car, it's because I don't have the right husband, rather than saying, really what it is because I don't really know myself and therefore I can't be honest in a relationship. And it's really taught me how to boil it down to the clarity of who I really am and look at that, you know, good, bad, and ugly, get support for it, and then do things that make me feel better about myself, and therefore, of course, I'm a much better friend, mother, partner, employee.
I'll never forget, after a few months of really getting things going, we keep things in envelopes, categories, with cash. We put things away for future expenditures, and all of a sudden, I had all this cash. And I went to Teresa, I said, you know, I think all our bills are paid and we still have this cash. Something's wrong. Because every time I would do things on my own, you know, adding the 2 plus 2, and I had it all worked out, I had this great scheme, the next month, you know, we were upside down. We owed more. We had insufficient funds. So I was always waiting for the other shoe to fall, and it never fell.
I believed other people could get better and have happy endings. I didn't believe I could get better and have happy endings. So the big breakthrough for me came when I finally realized, no, I can change. And I saw myself changing. I had about $40,000 in debt when I first came in, which was just over 6 years ago. I was able to pay off that debt within 2.5 years. And I'm still working my way out of my under-earning. But now I have the self-confidence of knowing that I have come this far and I can keep going. I can acquire things. I do have savings accounts now, and plural, and one of them is for taxes, but also for vacations. I'm very specific about where I want my money to go, and the more I can designate certain accounts for certain purposes, the less vague I am, the more insurance that I have that money will be there when I need it. I have money for emergencies, for whenever, because I never know when I'm going to need it. It's a comfort to me to know that I can cope with life. When I treat myself better, when I'm honest and just face up, these are my responsibilities, you know. When I start putting money toward that responsibilities and saying, yes, I'm going to have to meet it, I feel better about myself.
And it was the support from other members of DA that made the difference.
Just hearing other people talk about money was such a relief to me, because finally I had found a place where I could admit what was going on and the things that were causing me so much pain. And it was just such a huge relief for me to hear that other people had had those problems and they'd worked through them. All the problems that I had been going on in circles for years, other people had actually had those problems and worked their way out of them. And that's what I was looking for. How do you get out of this squirrel cage?
A possible solution would be to stay completely away from it. But that's too easy. Our society is not set up to teach us or even make it easy for us to save money. How many amazing offers did you receive in the mail this week for credit cards with low interest rates? So how can we support future generations? Like it or not, it's our responsibility to teach them about money. Unfortunately for John and Teresa, their children were already grown.
Yes, and in fact, that was one of the things I felt really bad about, because by the time I found Debtors Anonymous, my oldest son was already out of the house and my youngest son was a teenager, and it kind of felt like, geez, it's already kind of too late. You know, they've already learned the bad habits kind of thing. But what I did, instead of giving up, was just I shared with them, they know that I'm in Debtors Anonymous and that it's a 12-step group, and I talk with them about the tools that we use and money attitudes, and when my youngest son was still at home, so instead of controlling all the money, I decided to start gradually giving him more and more money towards what his needs were. And that's what we would track. You know, every school year you need X amount of clothes and activities, and he played sports and those kinds of things. And I would give him the money on a weekly basis, and then he was responsible for those things. And that's why I told him, you know, if you overspend it on eating out or having fun and then you don't have enough for clothes, just know that I'm not going to pitch more money in to buy you clothes. You'll either need to work and earn the money or, you know, wait until you get your next allowance. But not in a blaming way, just very much in a learning what your needs are and learning what your money attitudes are and being responsible for yourself in an age-appropriate way. And I talk with them a lot about, you know, our societal messages that come from, you know, a banker saying, oh, sure, take out, you know, home equity of your primary residence to go on vacation. And we talk about whether or not we think that's a sound financial principle, and if not, why not, and those kinds of things.
What I would have preferred to do now, looking back at it, is I would give them a budget and let them plan and say, all right, here, you go shopping for some jeans and shoes, and knowing that you have this much money, and let them see the consequences versus me just purchasing things for them. But more importantly, I would have had them in on the bill paying, the good, the bad, and the ugly, and show them that it doesn't have to be this secret thing, this bad thing, and money doesn't have to be bad. There's a way to handle money, and there's a way to handle it emotionally where you're not stressed every time you bring up the subject of money. Money could be an all right thing.
So now that they've gotten out of debt, what are the chances that they'd fall back into the same situation? Is it possible that they could easily go back to their old ways?
As soon as I walk out this door, I can go back to those old habits. You know, I have found out that I'm comfortable in my misery. I was miserable being in debt. I was miserable having insufficient funds. I was miserable being in vagueness. But I was comfortable.
I know that I would absolutely fall into the situation again if I choose to stop practicing the principles of DA, because it's an incurable disease. And I know that I am a compulsive debtor. So that is a fact. But I do choose to continue attending meetings and providing service and having a sponsor, working the steps, using the tools. And I know as long as I do that, that's like taking my medicine against a chronic illness, and it will keep me in remission. I really almost never have those kinds of emotional tugs like keeping up with the Joneses or not fitting in anymore, because I truly know now who I am and what my needs are, and I use my money in ways that are really emotionally and spiritually fulfilling for me. So I don't have that hole per se that I'm doing that shotgun approach. I'm just throwing money at it, trying to fill it up, when in reality, I didn't really need to eat out every lunchtime. I had other emotional needs, and once those are filled, I don't feel like, oh gosh, I have to eat out all the time. The compulsion is lifted.
DA is available for people who know that they have money problems, who know that they're over their head in debt. And it's also actually available to people who are uncomfortable with how they're dealing with money. We have people who are what we call under-earners, who they don't bring in a lot of money, and maybe they're just living right on the edge. They just barely are able to make their payments each month. And they are more than welcome. That's what we call under-earning, and we do have solutions for that in the program. Under-earning, as well as overspending, are the things that lead us into accumulating debt. So we address all of those. Business Debtors Anonymous is a part of DA that's specifically for people who own their own business or who are self-employed. And we are members of regular DA, but we also go to BDA to talk about our businesses and to talk about business issues and how do you apply the ethical principles and the spiritual principles that we learn in the regular DA meetings to a business setting. You know, we talk about spreadsheets and accounts receivable and all the normal business things. and how do you deal with difficult clients? How do you deal with unexpected expenses and unexpected prosperity? Because some of us tend to get money in and then we're uncomfortable having a lot of money, so we send it out real fast. Or we can be very grandiose. You know, we can say, oh, we're going to have 10 stores next year, but we don't have specific plans as to how much those stores are going to cost to operate. And so therefore, we sign a bunch of leases and can't operate the stores because we don't have the operating money. So we have help available for people in a wide range of situations. Here in the Phoenix area, you can get information about meetings. We have a phone line. It's listed in the white pages in the phone book under Debtors Anonymous. And that phone number is 602-234-6566. And also we have a website. We have a meeting list there that covers the entire state because we also have meetings in Tucson, Prescott, and Sedona. That website address is www.arizonada.org, and Arizona is spelled out. So if you want to call and leave a message on our phone line, somebody will get back to you, or you can just drop in on the web and then drop into a meeting and try us out.
I'm Minnie Salas. Thank you for joining me this morning for Closer Look. Until next time, and be sure to spend wisely.